Welcome to Two Fools Podcast. I'm Dave the Head.
And this is Drew.
And today we're going to talk about roleplay games. We're talking about sitting at the table with some dice, some paper, and some pals.
Or in this case, I believe what we're going to start is for people that maybe are interested and just haven't found a group or don't know what to do yet.
Because you have no pencils, no paper, no dice, no pals.
Wow, we're taking this to the poorhouse, apparently.
That's right. So, before we get started, I think Drew and I should probably talk to you folks about how long we've been into the game and why we think we're qualified to help you figure out how to get started. You want to go first?
Sure. I started 1997, 1998 with Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, or Second Edition, as it was called, with a group from my ROTC unit in high school.
That's the Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, for those of you who don't have it. It's a military-style class, but keep going.
And I was in the Rifle Corps, and we went on a field trip for a competition, and got real bored, and a game of D&D broke out.
As they are wont to do.
Yeah. And I had never played, so I was like, well, what's going on? And, you know, they didn't have, like, all the paper and pencils and whatnot. We were just kind of like, oh, the guy that knew the most was like, okay, here's your, you know, character and stats. He just kind of applied people with classes and whatnot.
Sure, sure.
And we did just some quick role play, and that's how it started from there.
I first got started also in Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Some JROTC students that I was in class with were doing something at lunch and invited me over to join in, and it went poorly at first. I fooled around with other role-playing games and then came back to D&D, which 2nd Edition is my true love, and don't play it anymore because nobody likes it, and that's okay. Me and my books will sit quietly in our own room. Memories of Bag of Holding. Anyway.
Don't put another bag in there.
That's all right. So, now me personally, I have played mostly D&D style games. I've played the Marvel game, role-playing game. I've played Robotech on the Palladium system. I've played handful of Palladium system games. Rifts is the real big one that if you're new and you want to get into the Palladium system, as it were, or even if you're old hat at role-playing but you'd like to try new systems, Rifts is the way to go there. R-I-F-T-S. Give that a Google search. I know you're a fan of the Big Eyes Small Mouth series.
Big Eyes Small Mouth, or BESM, which is up to 3rd edition now, and in my opinion, 3rd edition is the best of it so far, because 2nd edition had some majorly balance problems.
But it's a generic-style role-playing game fit for whatever story you want to do, with the idea of being, hey, this role-playing game takes its flavor from animes and mangas, right?
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, 3rd is, in my opinion, the best. Most of these systems, there are going to be flaws somewhere in it. It's just finding the systems that have the least amount.
Or finding the systems where you don't mind the flaws.
Yeah, or you don't mind it, or you... For other, for veterans, they're going to say, well, why don't you just house rule it? And, we can talk about that later.
We'll come back to that on another show. Another good setting a lot of people get into in the beginning is the White Wolf setting with Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf the Apocalypse. And these are the older versions. They've remade them into new Vampire the Catchphrase and Werewolf the Subplot. I don't know them personally. I never got into them. I figured after spending about $400 on werewolf books, I wasn't changing.
Whew.
Yeah. I liked it. I mean, the story was beautiful. And see, that's the key here. This is why many people first get involved into role-playing, is because it's so immersive. And it's as immersive or not as immersive as you, the player, want it to be. I play with people who are happy to sit down with some miniatures and a couple of dice, tell some tell some dumb jokes, drink a beer, roll some dice, kill some orcs. So it's a video game. You get to interact with people that you really like, or in some cases new. So let's start with the new part.
Okay, well, step one, you need a group.
Well,
you can't roleplay without a group.
And so, let's start with the group concept. Normally, you're going to have one person that's either the dungeon master, the game master, the storyteller, whatever. It's this person's job, usually, to create the stories and to be the judge. If that sounds weird to you, realize that most of these people are going to get fun from either A, sharing their story, or B, running a fair game for everyone. Because me personally, I'm often the dungeon master, and I get a lot of giggles out of watching everyone working together and coming up with solutions, especially when the solutions aren't something I ever saw coming.
Yeah, again, I DM from time to time. I get to switch off some because, again, I have a group over here at our friend's place that, you know, I go to every Friday and Saturday, and we have multiple people that DM, so I get to spend a little time DMing, I get to spend a little time playing.
I've always thought that you were a very good storyteller. I think that's one of the reasons why Big Eyes Small Mouth worked well with you, is that you come up with these very good, intricate plot stories, and you're very good at describing the backgrounds and what's going on, and I've always enjoyed that. The second thing you need to worry about your group is size. And, you know, like you, you know, you don't want to hear, but size does matter.
That's what she said.
Exactly. For initially, I would suggest that you look for a group that's between 3 and 4 players. That's not counting the storyteller. This allows everyone to have an intricate part in the game. Using Dungeons & Dragons is the good classic standby, you're going to have a warrior type, a healer type, a magic type, a rogue type, and if with the fifth player, you have that ability for a little extra, like in our example is going to be the bard or the druid or the ranger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You fit a lot of different roles in here, and it allows for the characters to spotlight from time to time, and when you first get started, let's be realistic, it's about the game.
It is, and for people that might not understand those classes, we're probably going to get into them a bit.
Sure.
But best way to describe that is if you take MMO standards, the tank, the DPS, the healer.
Sure.
The, you know, and go down like that. And each of those classes fit those roles. You just kind of have to get used to the system to figure out which one is which. Of course, the fighter's the tank. Depending on what version of D&D you're playing, it's either the mage or the rogue that's the DPS, and the cleric's the healer. I mean,
so we can focus on that stuff on a
later
day coming up. If you guys like that, you want to post a comment, hey, I'm interested, let me hear more what your opinions are and stuff like that. The other aspect to groups could be, and this is where you're going to have to know yourself or be willing to experiment. Games like White Wolf Games, it's not about the classes and the adventure, it's about the social interaction. Vampire the Masquerade is considered to be a very political game, with a prince of the city in charge, an elder vampire, and you're just a youngling who's just been freshly made and gotta make your way in the world today, and it takes everything you got, and getting away from all your worries. Ah, never mind. Now, did you ever play any White Wolf?
I did. For newbies, I would stress don't play World of Darkness. Pick one of them and stick with it.
Oh, yeah. Because... See, the fun thing about the White Wolf is they have like 5-7 different games, and they are all 85% interactive. Keep going, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's okay, but because the first time I played it, it was a mixed bag. You know, you had some vampires, some werewolves, a mage, and as the joke goes in our circle, werewolves win. Werewolves win.
Yeah, werewolves are, in this aspect, the werewolves are brutal combat beasts, which they are built that way. So, getting to know what you want and getting to know your group is step one. Step two... finding those people.
Yeah, quick little note before we move on the group size. Dave's right, especially if you're starting out, 3 to 4 is not counting the DM, GM, storyteller, is about what you're going to shoot for, especially if the DM, GM, storyteller is new at it as well. Because that is a learned skill to be able to manage time.
Since you brought that up, my advice for you is find some people who are already established. You be the new guy or gal at the table, and you'll probably get a lot of help, and people will have a lot more patience. If you've got 3 or 4 new people all kind of muddling their way through the game, you might get a sour taste.
Yeah, but at the same time, sometimes that's all you got.
Well, sure, you can't get around it. You can't get around it. If you and your pals want to go out, 4 or 5 of you go out and grab the box and make a weekend of it, that's one thing. And I'm by no means I'm saying don't do that. But if you're wanting to make this a real-time hobby and make it stick around, or you want to learn, that's my suggestion.
Okay, and I think we can now move into number 2, where to find those peoples.
Yes. Now, the number 1 answer I would say to you is a comic book shop.
/game store.
Especially if you go to the game store or the comic book store and you see weird tables with felt-covered tops. Dude, they're gamers. You're going to find miniatures. You're going to find card games. And you are going to find a role player. You will be able to find a group. A lot of comic book stores have started doing a Wizards of the Coast sponsored D&D adventures. I can't remember what they're calling it. Encounters?
I mean, Encounter Night or something like that. But it's a Wizards of the Coast, the game that actually makes D&D, sponsored event to where a registered RPGA, which is the
Role-Playing Gamers Association.
Yeah, an RPGA game master will run the event. And that's a great way to get a first taste of it, is to go to one of those. Usually, there'll be a couple of tables there for people to play. And you can just, come in, get with a table, meet some people, and go at it.
One of the advantages of the situation like this is that going in that everything's going to be even kilter. There may be people there. Let me roll
tonight.
Knowledge again, and David rolled a 1. Okay, starting that over, I have participated in the events from time to time, having almost 20 years of experience in different role-playing games, and the person who was new there that night, she and I were on the same footing because the characters were assigned. There was 8 characters to choose from. They were all considered equal. So it's a great way to get started. No one's going to steal the spotlight. No one's going to power game. It just can't happen. The disadvantage to it is it's probably going to be once or twice that you get to play into that story with those groups, and you might not see them again. So unless you want to, take the effort yourself to speak to people and meet them and exchange phone numbers and Facebook pages. And no, Drew, don't look so sad. People, interactions, it's good for us.
Piffle, talking to people, what's this?
So that would be my first set. Now, if you're not lucky enough to live around a game store or a comic book store or something of that ilk, Google your area. Google maybe Craigslist would be a good way to get started.
Be careful with that.
Well, obviously. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you're going to go to Craigslist, you should use some real-world sense and meet in public locations. We used to meet at the mall, and there was a game store that sponsored a game night, and that's how I got to know many of the people I know today. The second aspect is on the internet, and I'm sure that there's people out there who can leave comments at much better advice than I'm giving at the moment, because I'm not an internet fanatic.
Savvy guy?
Yeah, I'm not internet savvy. I push the buttons and the videos play, and I'm pretty happy with that.
As far as internet goes...
Oh, message boards. That's...
Those are kind of going the way of the dodo.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, not completely. You'll still find them forum boards around, but it's mainly for people like me that kind of live and breathe the internet. If it's just somebody that, they might use YouTube, Facebook, and...
Twitter?
Twitter or Tumblr or something like that. They may not.
Oh, Tumblr. See, I don't know much about that. But
I don't know much about Tumblr either, but I know it exists.
But my youngling does, and she loves it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an example. I mean, there's ways of getting. I would have, in the old days, back in the early 2000s, I would have said Yahoo groups.
Well, there is one thing. There is a service I know about that you might not. It's called Roll20. It is an online website that is made for gaming online.
All right.
It's, you can set up free account, go on there and find a group and use Skype or whatever built-in engine they have there and just have a role play session. Now, where they're going to try to make money off of you is in, because I have an account and I played around with this for a little bit, in Roll20. For you to get any more than just kind of like, if you're the GM, you can bring up a map and, right, you know, draw on it and show people the map, or you can use these little sprites to be different characters and things. You only get so many sprites. They're going to try to sell you packs of sprites.
Well, I mean, if you're into it, got a dedicated group, it might be worth the investment.
It might be worth the investment. I'm just letting you know that, you know, just to play, there is no
cost
to it, but if you really want to get into it, there will be a bit of cost, kind of like any role-playing game.
So, you know, search around. If you don't have real world, search around on the internet, find out what's local. I really think a Google search with your city address and gaming. Wizards of the Coast site, if you're into the D&D idea. And we go to this because it's been around since the 70s. Dungeons & Dragons is almost the grandfather of almost all role-playing games. I'm sure that some people who are really much further into this can come up with some examples of things that existed either side by side or before, but to my mind, chainmail and... Did they have a catchphrase, or was it just chainmail was the first one? I think the first one by Gary Gygax was just chainmail. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just chainmail.
So we're talking like early 70s, maybe even late 60s. I don't know. We could Wikipedia it, but we're lazy.
And now somebody's going to say you're acting like too much of an old man.
Yeah, well, you know, I like it.
Also, another place you can try, if you're in college, I guarantee you your school has a club.
Yeah, a gaming club.
Look them up.
Maybe even in high school, if anyone's listening there, your group, you might have a group around. It, you know, talk to some of the faculty. They'll know one way or the other.
Well, even if they don't, there's probably a group there.
Definitely at college. Definitely.
Well, even in high school, there's probably a group there. You just got to kind of listen and...
Watch.
You know, because they're not going to...
So roll well on your spot check. D&D joke. Number 7.
I was getting ready to say, but they are there. They're just probably not doing much of it at school because, sadly, D&D still has a bit of a stigma around it. But
well, let's talk.
Not as much as it used to.
Let's talk about the third step. What am I going to need to play? Now, in all honesty, to play a role-playing game, you need to bring your imagination. You need to sit down at the table with your friends and imagine. That's step one. If you want to invest down the road in some dice, in some figurines, in some whatever extra things are sold to work with your game, then, you know, you'll have a few days under your belt, so to say.
To break it down, like you said, yes, imagination, but if we're talking actual material goods, you're going to need some paper.
Probably.
You're going to need some pencils.
Definitely.
You're going to need some dice.
Not initially,
but it would help.
Especially if you're playing with older gamers, people who enjoy, you're going to be able to borrow dice for the most part. Etiquette rule number one, always ask before you touch people's dice. I have never met more superstitious people than gamers and their dice.
Well, when you have a walking curse like we do in our gaming group, you kind of get that way.
Yeah. Well, and then if you do have to invest, you can invest in dice at the gaming store or online, and usually you can get your first set of dice for $7, $8, maybe $10. We're not talking like a large investment.
Yeah, just like I was getting ready to say, a lot of gaming stores will sell the little tubes that has one of every dice that you're gonna need. And that's usually $6, $7, $8, depending. Usually on the company more than anything, because they're all usually made out of the same stuff.
So, making the jokes about the dice etiquette, do remember that probably the person hosting the game, the DM and whatever, is going to be supplying a lot of the extra supplies. I know I myself bought a lot of the Pathfinder miniatures and used them for the D&D game, and I bought the map that can be wiped off and reused over and over. So people have made investments. So if you're invited to one of these groups, do take a little care that you're playing with other people's toys.
I was going to say, I haven't done the miniatures and map thing, and I'm starting to work on that, and I would suggest, if you're starting a group yourself and you don't have this, I would look for a good mat, like dry erase map mat, and some, or maybe just use some dice if you don't have miniatures.
Well, I mean, if we're talking starting out, if we're talking bare basic starting out, take a cereal box that it's emptied, cut it open, cut it into squares, write people's initials on it. There you have tokens.
Yes. And I'm just saying that because for the longest time, my group kind of was like, nah, we don't need, you know, miniatures or whatever. We don't need this. You cannot imagine the number of arguments over positioning that will break out.
Well, what Drew's referencing here as well is that the game's mechanics is built around that concept. I know when I got started, like the Marvel Avengers, or it wasn't Avengers, just Marvel role-playing game, they had measurements listed as areas. And areas were not strongly defined. Right. You'd look at the map, and there'd be a little square, that's an area, with a lot of stuff going on in it. And then you'd have wide-open streets where, you know, the Thing and the Hulk could be smashing each other in the face, and that was one area. So your setting is going to also help. I've seen people play Vampire the Masquerade with nothing but dice. And there is live-action role-playing where they don't even use that.
I think we're going to save LARPing for another...
And maybe find someone who's more into it than we are.
Perhaps, because that one's after you... To LARP, you need to know the rules.
Well, I mean, I know people who started with LARPing and then got into tabletop, and then, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, but I'm willing to bet they had somebody that really knew the rules.
Oh, sure, sure.
Right there keeping watch.
Most LARP groups are tight-knit groups, and you're invited to them. So, stuff is... And actually, the easiest aspect of this getting started. Because stuff is easily gotten or easily substituted by other things. So, what are you thinking about? Anything else?
Well, let me think... if you can buy a pack of character sheets, that'd be nice, but you don't need them. Like I said, notebook paper works just fine.
So let's talk about a few games that we think might be good for starters to get into.
D&D.
So, okay. So we saw that one coming a mile away. Dungeons & Dragons. Again, right now they're on there about their sixth. I'm not sure how to explain it.
It's the technical iteration. Name is D&D Next.
Right.
But it's also called 5th edition.
I might be stepping on some toes here, but I also would suggest the Pathfinder series, which is a deviation from a former Dungeons & Dragons set, and it's very friendly, very easygoing, very easy to get into is what I should have said. And a lot of people have a lot of love for it still, so it's going to be a lot easier to find a Pathfinder group.
I've never played Pathfinder.
Hey, did you play 3.5?
Yeah, and I've heard that it's pretty much 3.5 maximized and on steroids.
Well, yeah, I call it 3.5 with some training wheels and kids gloves. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. They do add a few new aspects that I think have come over to the D&D Next. The way feats were used in D&D Next was a lot like how feats were done in Pathfinder that I saw, and you had extra stuff here and there. So, anywho, before we go off on a tangent, as we're apt to do, Dungeons & Dragons is going to be our number one choice for you guys.
Tangents are okay, they fill time.
Well, we don't want to just fill time for filling time. That's not good for the quest. How about games to avoid?
For first-timers?
Yeah.
Riffs.
The Palladium system is dated. It was built, I believe, in the late 70s, maybe early 80s. And if you like mathematics, you're going to love Palladium. If you hate mathematics, you're not going to love Palladium.
As I call it, it is the game of skill monkey, because that's all it's made up of. Yeah. Tons of skills.
I would suggest Savage World is a good one to get into as well. Savage Worlds is a system. See, now, Dungeons and Dragons is a setting and a system, but could we call it, in the old days it was called the D20 system. Is it still called that now? D&D Next?
I don't know if it has an official, like, system name, but, well, the reason it was called the D20 system was because they pushed it into other things.
Right, because, I mean, there was Star Wars D20, there was Deadlands D20, and if you don't get some of these names, it's okay.
Whereas with 5th, it seems like they said, you know what, we just need to hunker down, get D&D right.
Get back to our roots.
Screw trying to include other games and whatnot. Let's get D&D right. And the fans have loved it so far for, well, at least most fans.
Well, I've not played a lot. I've gotten into it a little bit here and there. And it's okay. So far, so good. I have to admit, I resisted 3.0 and 3.5 with the furious flaming Templar sword of justice and righteousness. That second edition was my jam and nothing would take its place. And I held the battle line for about 7 years, got into a game, it was okay, started running it, liked it more, and there are still things about it I don't like, but there are more about it that I do.
Well, again, I am not the biggest fan of Second, but we've discussed this before. I think it was more due to who my DM was.
And that's where we come to our special notes. Realize that your initial gaming group is probably going to give you your first impressions of the game. It's not fair, but it's real.
Yeah.
So do remember these little side notes. Number one. Not everybody plays the game the same way. Drew said earlier, house rules.
Yeah.
So, why don't you give us an example of a house rule that you either love or hate?
House rules that I love or hate. I'm trying to think back. Because we didn't have a ton in our
groups
right now. So, I'm trying to think of a house rule that it would probably be something in the BEF. Oh, here we go. Now it's been a while since I've ran BESM, but one of the things that was still broken in BESM was the weapon system.
Okay.
And not to get too technical, but you would buy levels of weapon that would make it do more damage and you could add stuff to it.
Sure.
To kind of counteract people just stacking all these modifiers on it without any reason, you know, they could have a level 1 weapon but stack like 10 different modifiers on it, and it still does 100 damage.
Okay.
I came up with what was called the slot system, which is for every level of weapon you have, you can get an attribute of 1.
So you could modify your weapon.
Yeah.
So,
and some attributes cost like 1, some cost 2, some cost 3.
So for an example, you know, I'm Han Solo and I bought blasters at level 1. I can get that scope on there to give me a bonus to ranged attacks.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then when I buy blasters at level 2, I can go ahead and add that hair trigger to get a little quicker pull and keep going.
Yeah, you could add another level 1 or you could drop the other level 1 and get a level 2 or something.
Okay, so what we're getting at here, because quite frankly, I have very little idea what Drew's talking about, and I'm sure if I gave you some examples of our house rules, you'd look at me like, what? Deadlands? Well, poker chips? Card games? What?
Well, I remember Deadlands. I was in it. Well, I had the Jesus fire, as it was.
Yes, yes. Poor old Whiskey McTavish. Anyway, I house ruled a rule in there. The game has a mechanics where you use poker chips to modify dice rolls or take extra dice rolls. And I found that no one ever used the first. They went white, red, and blue. Blue being the rarest, white being the most common. No one ever used the white chip. So I house ruled what it did, and lo and behold, people started using them again, and the game flowed better, in my opinion. So when I recently, in the past few years, went and played Deadlands with someone else, I had been playing it my way so long that when they started doing it by the way of the rules, I was confused and had to check myself before I wrecked myself.
Too late.
Yeah. So what we're getting at here is you're going to see some house rules, and you're going to have a little flexibility. Or you're going to end up playing the game with the same people over and over again.
Well, yeah, and house rules are not a bad thing, you know. And I know, if you're new, and say you went out and got the book, You decide, right. I want to go get the player's handbook. I want to read it.
Right.
Which, it's a long read, but it's a good read.
Well, it teaches you how to play the game.
Yeah. So, if the DM says, well, this is how we're doing it here, I would say, you know, maybe ask so you get a clarity on what's going on, so he can say, oh, this is how I'm house ruling it.
Right.
But, you know, I wouldn't say confront him going, you're doing this wrong.
Because that makes you a rules lawyer. And the rules lawyer is someone nobody wants to play with. There's nothing wrong with being the rules encyclopedia. You know, page 47 states that this is how it's done.
In fact,
are you going to be doing that? No? Roger that. Thanks for telling me.
In fact, the rules encyclopedia / lookup man is the DM's best friend.
Well, it depends on the DM, but you're probably right.
And that's how I usually do with D&D, especially with a new one. I don't know all the rules yet. So I usually give somebody a book and say, look this up while I continue to do what I'm doing.
So I think the final thoughts is this. Now, for me, it's always been, I enjoy the games, but it's really an excuse to hang out with people I like. It's an excuse to get 7 to 10 people together in our group, which, by the way, would not suggest starting.
No.
It makes the game a little difficult. But yeah, it's an excuse to hang out with friends. So if you're not having fun, you're not making friends, you might need to relook at the group. Find out, is it you, is it the group, or is it the game? Because I like my group, but I don't always like their game.
Again, yeah, it's just kind of sitting there and going, okay, what is actually my problem here? Is it that I can't really tell what's going on because everyone's loud? And again, 7 to 10 people, that's going to happen. So try to keep it lower than that.
Well, let's try to work with our 3 to 5 players.
Well, 3 to, I would say if you have a good DM, 6 would be the max.
Yeah, I
and that's pushing it.
For the new guy, I would totally not. I would stick with the 3 to 5.
Well, like I said, if your DM's good and a veteran, then he can probably handle
or
6.
She.
He or she, yes. Sorry.
It's okay.
But, well, I didn't want to sound like the rule books nowadays, he/she.
I like the s/he.
Mm.
The sahi.
Sahi.
That's how I read it, sahi.
But, you know, if you have a good veteran DM, he can probably handle up to 6. But again, that's pushing the limits, because you can only divide your attention so much.
And some systems just can't handle it. That Deadlands system, I play the old-style Deadlands. Google that if you like. And one year, I ran a campaign and ended up bringing 2 campaigns together, and we had 12 people at the table. And, yeah, it was a long event. People enjoyed the story, but I think some people did not have as much fun as they did when they were in groups of 4 and 5.
I would have been drunk by the end of the night and telling everyone to shut their face, but...
or to draw.
No, just shut your face, because 12, ugh.
Well, we had a lot of room, too, so it helped.
Well, even though it's just... splitting your attention amongst 12 people, because I can guarantee you those 12 players all wanted to do something by themselves.
No, this group was pretty good at teamwork, and usually when someone goes off by themselves, they end up getting killed. So, do you have any closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts?
For the new player?
For the new player? One, I would say whatever game you're getting into, go ahead and get at least the player's handbook. Or whatever the core book is, just so you can read up and kind of maybe hopefully have a little bit of knowledge about what's going to go on when you go to this thing. I'm not saying you have to, but it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, reading some of the rules does help making games go better.
Or, I mean, even if... And, again, I know these books can be costly. They're like $30 a pop, if not more.
Well, I mean, if you've tried out, let's say, these D&D encounters a few times, 2 or 3 times under your belt, and it feels like something you're going to want to do more and more of, drop the $30. Do yourself a favor. Or whatever that costs, I don't know.
For D&D Next, it's $50.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know... I still have my books from high school, from 1993. They're not going to go out of style.
Nope, but as long as you make sure to take care of them, they'll last.
So.
I mean, we just moved some of my books in from recent moving thing and your lovely second editions in one of those bags right over there.
All right, well, I think that covers our initial idea, and I think we've given ourselves some ideas for some further shows in the future. I think we're going to do a D&D series maybe and start talking about character classes and comparing them between the... I'd like to do a comparison between the settings of 2nd edition, 3.5, and D&D next. By the way, there was a 4th edition, but we as a group have all decided to avoid it like the bubonic plague. That's not saying it's a bad system. That's a saying it's a system not for us.
Correct. And again, none of us played enough in it to really say, hey, this... I mean, I could give you a glossary kind of view of what 4th edition was and how it worked. But we played maybe 2 campaigns in it, and I don't think we finished either.
All right. And... I guess my last piece of advice is if there's a genre you like, space, Star Wars, Star Trek,
space.
You like samurai ninjas, you like knights and dragons, you like cartoon girls with big giant hammers.
Okay.
You're going to find it in role-playing. You like vampires and werewolves.
Mm-hmm. You're going to find it in role-playing.
That's right. So, for Two Fools Network...
This is Drew.
And Dave the Head.
Be sure to check us out on YouTube at twofoolsnetwork.com. We're also on iTunes, Two Fools Podcast, and on Podomatic, Two Fools Podcast. Have a good night.